By early next morning, we were underway and soon clear of the defences at the mouth of the Forth and heading southward towards the Humber. The surrender was over and the curtain rung down on the last act of the naval war. There were no outward signs of triumph, no broom at the mast like Tromp, or whip at the mast like Blake. If such thoughts had not crossed our minds as we shaped course for our base, they came to us as we approached the bell mouth of the jetty at Immingham and saw the outline of the mass of the destroyer Nimrod silhouetted against the sunset. An odd shape about the truck of her foremast puzzled us for a moment until we recognised what it was. There tied to the masthead was a broom. The war was over and it only remained for the actors to take their bows, to leave the stage and in due course to read their press notices. Our own trickled out slowly, the first in January 1919, being from the First Lord, Sir Eric Geddes, who said, "As the German Navy would not come out in force, our submarines and mine-laying boats had, day after day and night after night, entered huge German minefields of Heligoland and blocked the channels through which some German boats left and returned. These trap mines led to over 100 German craft being caught during the first 6 months of 1918. A year later, as the flotilla was being disbanded, the naval correspondent of the Times, in a long article on its work, wrote, "By its many achievements, the 20th Flotilla created a record for the gallantry, coolness and daring which was unsurpassed. With the 6th Flotilla at Dover, the incomparable 6th, as Sir Reginald Bacon called them, the vessels of the 20th Flotilla had the distinction of being perhaps the best known of all the destroyer flotillas of the Navy. Although the 3rd Flotilla at Harwich, composed of the L-class, came into prominence in the early days of hostilities. In other cases, it was generally individual boats, or small groups, which carried distinctions. But the 20th Flotilla stood apart from all the rest, and its own special task, as the First Lord once explained, was to go through the enemy minefields and mine inside them. This was more than our fair share of praise, as the flotilla had merely done the job it was set to do. In the 8 months of its activity, the 11 destroyers which composed it may have crippled or destroyed close on 200 German craft. The exact number of enemy ships forced by the flotilla to keep company with Vehement and Ariel on the bed of the North Sea is unknown, but it must represent a fair-sized fleet. For us, the curtain descended on the 22nd November, as we penned into Immingham Basin on our return for the surrender of the German fleet. Though the flotilla was to see active service and lose one of its numbers in action against the Russian fleet in the Baltic in 1919. On our return from the Forth, there was little for the snotties to do. For lectures on navigation previously given by the Lieutenant N in Abdiel had been cancelled. Attention to confidential books, correction of charts, filing of notices to mariners, work on the wine accounts and on demobilisation papers occupied our mornings. In the afternoon, we played rugger, or walked through the bare and flat countryside of northeast Lincolnshire. Following the custom of their captains, the midshipmen addressed one another by the name of their respective ships. I was Venturous, and my friends, Tarpon, Sandfly, Ferret, or Prince. For a brief moment, the monotony was relieved by ceremonial parade, but the high hope that we might be provided with swords for the occasion came to nothing, and it was a disappointing day for the snotties. Christmas came along and with it leave in London. Then New Year's Eve, when we indulged in celebrations while waiting for the signal giving the honours list and half-yearly promotions for the Navy, Captain D was awarded a CB and the Captain of Vanquisher promoted to Commander. It was at least an acknowledgement. Early in the new year, my skipper told me that he had intended to apply for my special promotion to sub-lieutenant if the armistice had not come along, and suggested that I might consider transferring to the RN. But life in the peacetime Navy did not appeal to me. So the days moved on and for a short time flags were flown at half-mast for the death of Prince John. On the 21st January, all RNVR officers were given indefinite leave. On the morning of 25th January, I said my goodbyes and left the flotilla. 2 days later, on 27th of January, I was demobilised. For the next few weeks, I explored London in uniform, and it was quite by accident that I found myself on the Mall on the day of the opening of Parliament. The road was lined with soldiers spread a few yards apart, but the crowds had dispersed, after seeing the state procession on its way to Westminster, and so I had a good view of the return journey, standing in the same line as the troops. The procession appeared from under the Admiralty. The Sovereign's escort passed in the clatter of hoofs. The troops came to the present, and the King and Queen drove by in an open state lando, but not before the King had acknowledged a midshipman salute and the Queen had bowed. The next carriage contained the heads of the fighting services, and on a prod from the CIGS, Field Marshal Sir William Robertson. My salute was returned from the First Sea Lord, Admiral Sir Roslin Weems. The rest of the carriages containing heads of state departments and other important people of high rank were so much chicken feed to me, but I gave each of them a salute all the same. A few days later, I wore my uniform for the last time.